Our theme for the month of April has been resistance. And today will be the last sermon of the three sermons that I'm giving this month on that topic. I started the month with an overview of resistance and the idea that you need to resist the temptation to withdraw from the messiness of life. Escaping from the evils of the world is not the same as resisting those evils. And the good life is a life of engagements. I got some interesting feedback on that part of the sermon, and it was pointed out to me that many people find their spiritual center when they withdraw from the pressures and the messiness of life. And in fact, many people come to church seeking that exact escape from the crass and the noisy secular world. And that was the world that I was saying that you needed to engage with. Well, with this, as with so many questions about how to live a good life, the answer is not either or, but both. And it's in the discussion and the seeking of balance and the challenge of ourselves to get out of our comfort zone, that's what's important. This, for me, highlights the complexity of our UU faith tradition. In one sermon for me, you may hear about the importance of engagement in social justice issues. In another sermon, you may hear about the importance of quiet contemplation, meditation, and spiritual retreats. We're all in a different place in our spiritual journey. Different people here today need to hear different messages. But we come together to share and to learn from each other. And so today, it's been my intention to provide you with material in Sunday services that make you question your assumptions and consider ideas that may be challenging. Second sermon in the series was inspired by the writings of Albert Camus, an atheist, who confronted questions of the apparent meaninglessness of life, but still found a deep and profound joy in living. Within the midst of winter, he discovered an invincible summer. So now for my third and final sermon on this theme, I'd like you to think of the resistance in medical terms, as in the body's ability to fight off disease. I recognize this is Easter Sunday, and I'm also going to weave Easter in here, believe it or not. So ease is that normal, healthy functioning, being in essential harmony and equilibrium with one's environments. You know how it feels to be at ease. Disease, then, it's anything that upsets that harmony, making life unpleasant, maybe making life painful. As I struggled to say in my first sermon, a certain amount of disease is something to be cultivated. It's in the uncomfortable situations that we find real growth. Growth implies an ability to cope with life's challenges, and you can never overcome a challenge if you spend your time avoiding that challenge. Today, as I've said several times, is Easter Sunday, a day when Christians around the world, including Christians within Unitarian Universalist congregations, celebrate the triumph of Jesus over death. The story of Easter is a story of resistance. And this morning, I want to start that story for you from a place where it really begins. A little aside here. As I was doing this, I realized how ignorant I was of Christian tradition, of the history of the Judeo-Christian faith tradition, of the history of the Jewish people. And I wonder how much of this message is being lost now almost entirely with our children. And yet it is so fundamental to our culture, to our literature, to our stories. So I'll take you back to a story that you may or may not know. The year is 587 BCE. The tiny Middle Eastern state of Judah and its capital Jerusalem are finally crushed by the mighty Babylonian Empire led by Nebuchadnezzar. And it was to be an absolute and total defeat and crush. In this case, there was no short-term military resistance. That was futile. The elite classes of the Jewish society of the time, priests and royalty and merchants, were taken into custody and marched out of Judah and into exile in the land of Babylon. The period of exile would last for some 50 years, and during that time the Jews would resist assimilation into Babylonian society by preserving and enhancing their unique cultural and religious practices. This was a time in history when a lot of the things that we think are fundamental to Judaism really became fundamental to Judaism. During this exile in Babylon, in order to preserve their culture and who they were, they needed to have practices that separated them from the people they were captive with. As I think about that time, so long ago, I'm reminded of our own history in Canada, when our leaders set out to destroy any resistance by the indigenous peoples of this land, by destroying their language and their culture. And how today the recovery of that cultural heritage is so important to resisting assimilation. After 50 years, the Babylonian Empire was conquered by the Persian ruler Cyrus. And the Jewish people were allowed to return to their homeland and, among other things, rebuild their temple in Jerusalem. I hope you can see the connection to our theme of resistance, but you may still be wondering about the connection to the theme of Easter. Well, one prophet or scribe wrote at that time about his experience of exile and what this meant for the relationship between the Jewish people and their God. The writer remains anonymous, but his or her writings appear now in the book of Isaiah, the portion of that book identified as 2nd Isaiah. This unknown author wrote the words that would, some 600 years later, be used to explain the life of Jesus. The author wrote in Isaiah 53 about the suffering servant. And the suffering servant in the mind of the author was clearly the state of Judah and its people. They had been punished for their transgressions against their God by the Babylonian exile. But 600 years later, it would be interpreted very differently. I have a short video clip that I want to play now. It's a clip that features John Shelby Spawn. Many of you will know John Shelby Spawn. He's the controversial retired bishop of the Newark Diocese of the Episcopal Church, the American branch of the Anglican Church. And I think every Universalist should know John Shelby Spawn. One thing that I just learned myself is that this retired Episcopal bishop was named Humanist of the Year in 1999. His theology represents the big tent of Christianity. He's the author of many popular books with very non-traditional interpretations of the Bible. And Bishop Spawn is certainly aware that the writing in Isaiah was about the defeated state of Judah. But the words would later be used by Christians as if they foretold the coming of Jesus. So as I played with this clip, I took it out of a much larger sermon and tried to select the pieces I was going to play. The more I worked with it and the more I played with it, the more uncomfortable I got with it. And the only way to interpret this in my mind is in the tradition of Jewish Midrash. Spawn makes some assumptions about what might have been going on here and kind of elaborates the ideas. And I went back and read the whole 2nd Isaiah last night to see if this was really what was in there. And so much depends on your interpretation, what you choose to put emphasis on. But there is no doubt that the story of the suffering servant is the genesis of the story of Jesus. 600 years before Jesus was born. Not that it was written prophetically to say this person is coming, but later, looking back on it, we could see a connection. And there's even speculation that Jesus, who would have known this passage very well, created his identity with the knowledge of this suffering servant and trying to live into that to that prophecy, if you will.
To be the Messiah, he says, is to be like a suffering servant who is willing to bear the abuse of the world without returning abuse in kind, who is willing to absorb the hatred of the world without returning hatred in kind. It became the job of this victim to absorb hatred and abuse and transform it as love and forgiveness. So this unknown person penned this portrait. He talked about one who was despised, violated, betrayed. He talked about one who would be like a lamb who fled silently before those who would slaughter it. But someone thought enough of that portrait to take the words of this unknown prophet and to attach them to the scroll of Isaiah. So this prophet is known as Second Isaiah. His word constitutes chapters 40 through 55 of the book. We even think he's talking about Jesus. Talking about the servant, the lamb. He was despised, forsaken, a man of sorrows, and acquainted with grief. We know the words very well. No one paid much attention to these words until a period of time passed, about 600 years. But these words were carried in the sacred scriptures of the Jewish people so that they were always there, a kind of minority report. And then a man named Jesus of Nazareth appeared. And the meaning that people found in his lives, they found interpreted in the portrait of the servant from 2 Isaiah, the lamb, silent before the slaughter. The one who absorbs hatred and abuse and rejection and betrayal and denial and who returns it as love.
And so the story of Easter, the suffering servant, begins with an account of the suffering of a nation and a people who cannot resist the powers amassed against them, and so they must accept their fate. And it comes down to us today as the story of a man, Jesus of Nazareth, who similarly could not resist the forces that would take his life. That story, or rather the thread of that story, has provided resistance against disease for over 2,000 years. Belief in the bodily resurrection of Jesus is no longer a test of Christian faith for most Christians. It is a test in some Christian denominations, I grant you, but whether one chooses to believe that element or not, the life of Jesus continues to have a profound effect on the world today. In his book, Jesus and Philosophy, Don Cupid writes, "This book is an attempt to right the historic wrong, or at least to fill a rather surprising gap. Although 20 years or so after his death, the fiery and very interesting Jewish teacher, Jesus of Nazareth, began to be idolized by his own followers. Like Buddha, he was made into the personification of his own teaching and given an exalted cosmic status. Like the Buddha, he was made into a personification of his own teaching and given an exalted cosmic status. Within a few decades, he had been so completely buried by supernatural belief about himself that in all the years since, it's been very difficult to make out his own voice and quite impossible to take him seriously as a thinker." I like this quote. "Like royalty, gods are not to be taken seriously. They are to be praised just for being there." Culbert argues for a very human Jesus. His contribution to the world was to provide a basis for ethical action that had nothing to do with overriding authority. Not God, not moral law, not a practical reason, but instead a basis for ethical action that was thoroughly based on human emotion, on the emotion of love. This is the fault line that still contributes to much of our dis-ease today. The fault line I refer to runs between a belief that there is some external basis for ethics, be that God or natural law, or the calculation of least harm, and a belief that an ethical response is an internal, emotionally driven response. It's a fault line that not only separates individuals, but it's a fault line that runs through the heart of each and every one of us. Near the beginning of this sermon, I defined ease as being essentially in harmony with one's environment. So disease becomes being seriously out of harmony with one's environment. Now, in conclusion, I'll suggest what remains the best way to enhance your resistance to disease, to enhance your immune system, to promote your spiritual immunity, to remain at ease even when your environment is changing. To continue the medical analogy, I'm interested in promoting immunity. That means your ability to be exposed to harmful agents and then to fight them off. So turning off the television, blocking news reports, etc., is not going to promote immunity. In fact, as we know now, it's exposure to harmful agents that allows us to develop immunity. So, in closing, I came up with a list of 8 items. And if you'll allow me, I'd like to encourage your thought on how best to promote your resistance, your ability to fight off disease, fight off dis-ease. These were honestly off the top of my head late last night. And maybe there is, I was going to say no particular order, but maybe there is an order here. The first is to cultivate a sense of humor. It's the best single way to resist dis-ease. And it works in almost any situation to some degree. The second is to cultivate and exercise tact. It's the essential ingredient of good interpersonal relations. And bad interpersonal relations is a huge source of dis-ease. The third is to take care of your physical well-being. A healthy body goes a long way to promoting a healthy mind. The fourth is do what you can to establish some financial security. I know that seems impossible in some cases. But there's no denying the effect that financial insecurity can have on your sense of dis-ease. The fifth, cultivate your self-discipline and your sense of willpower. You are in control. Practice delaying gratification. There's that famous psychology experiment been done over and over again where children are given different things. I've seen it with a marshmallow. Right? And they're asked to sit. And if they can wait a minute or 2 minutes, well, the person leaves the room and come back, they'll be given 2 marshmallows. And some children can't wait a minute or 2. Some try to hollow the marshmallow out, eat the inside of the nose. But the important thing is that one has been studied over, this has been done over generations, over decades, that the children who can delay that gratification, who can wait, do much better in life generally. That certainly isn't the pattern that we're taught through advertising and through television and through bombarded with all these other messages. Sixth item, work on expanding your circle of friends, especially close friends. with whom you can truly share those things that are sources of disease for you. And when appropriate, seek professional help when you need it. And lastly, find a spiritual community where you feel comfortable. And it goes without saying, I sincerely hope that we can be that for you. May it be so.